Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Hello, Des.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm okay, but you know there was a bit of a trauma in our recent history.
Well, I'd sort of been looking for our last episode, but it went missing, Peter. What's the story? Do you want to tell our listeners?
Stop telling people you don't know what went on. But yes, this is in some ways an unbalanced relationship. I'm in charge of technical stuff. And so, let me put it this way. I have an official statement produced, and it goes like this. Fate stepped in, and we now have a Squid of Despair lost episode. And it was one of mine as well, which is a little bit sad for me. I honestly don't know what happened, but it just didn't happen. It didn't record. It disappeared somewhere. I don't know.
Well,
but yeah.
I don't mean to tease you too much, because actually I'm a bit pleased, because there were a few wardrobe mishaps, whatever the podcast equivalent that is, on the episode, which culminated in me telling a very, very bad joke where I forgot the punchline at the end of that particular episode. Yeah. And so I think this was just the universe reflecting that actually that one wasn't good enough.
Well, possibly. And yes, I was going to have to edit that particularly bad joke out, absolutely. But so let's just put a little bit of history back in place. So the premise I put out at the start of this lost squid was, and it was a great question, it was, have you ever been involved in a car accident that resulted in your death? And this led Daz and I onto a discussion around dealing with stupid questions or people who, to us, have a totally illogical point of view or position. There was much wise advice presented by both parties, which is now lost forever. And even Daz and I decided we couldn't recreate that particular moment. It was very, very special. And so this is officially a lost squid.
Well, one day this will be a classic. If it's ever found on eBay, someone flogging it, because actually it was really
recorded. Found in the BBC archive sometime in 50 years' time, maybe. But listen, I do know that we concluded with a rewrite of the original question. And that question, have you ever been involved in a car accident that resulted in your death, was from an actual car insurance survey or form or claim form. I'm not sure. It was from one of those things. And I think, and credit to Daz, because you rewrote that question to, have you ever been involved in a car accident that resulted in your temporary clinical death? So he made a lot of sense out of nonsense what he did there. So lost squid, rest in peace, wherever you are. And now, Daz, what is the squid of the day?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, Peter. So for this squid, I'd like to talk about resilience, Peter. I'd like to discuss with you the importance of it, what it is, and perhaps some strategies that as individuals we can adopt to get a bit more of it, and perhaps a surprising side benefit of coping strategies that may not immediately come to mind. So there we go. The importance, relevance, and necessity of resilience.
Well, you've shown a lot of it over the years in working with me, I must admit.
Well, thank you for going there, first of all. I mean, while you Google, would you like me to perhaps...
Sound my keyboard going, yes.
...position it a little bit better. So, I mean, I was thinking about this as it was my turn. You know, the world continues to be a pretty difficult place for many of us right now, doesn't it? With all that dreadful stuff that's going on in Israel and, you know, the Ukraine war, I still think we have a mental health pandemic, really, you know, which was made worse during the real pandemic, and every day people struggle with illness and bereavement and relationship challenges and loneliness. And so, you know, there's just... as wonderful as life is, there are lots of challenges in a lot of people's lives. And if you layer on top of that in a working environment, you know, where let's just say we're a community of very, very productive people, you know, that stream of daily challenges just, you know, you're vulnerable to it consuming your energy, aren't you? And you want to stay alert and happy and balanced. But I think that does require resilience, and I think resilience requires coping skills, and that's what I wanted to sort of chat through with you, because you are a very resilient person, Peter, and I thought you might have some tips and tricks you might want to share with the audience.
Interesting, interesting. I mean, well, part of me immediately wants to go back to, we've talked about optimism, we've talked about fun, we've talked about that kind of positive attitude. It kind of reflects back to a lot of that, I feel, is that if you are of that moment, if you're feeling in a positive, optimistic state of mind, then I believe you kind of have a little bit of a Teflon coating when it comes to sort of things coming at you and trying to attack your potential resilience or demand, or not even demanding your resilience, because you cope, you're on a kind of an energy flow, I suppose. But you're right about work. I mean, there's this, we're in a challenging period of time at work at the moment. Lots of demands of and questions and decisions to be made, and they all come at you as kind of little tiny piranha bites, and it can wear you down.
That's a good. I was just going to say thank you for, cutting to the punchline as you always do and spoiling my whole episode. But no,
What, you have piranhas down? You actually know
no, that
that?
not that last bit, that first bit. I thought that was actually a
Oh,
very good summary.
okay.
Yeah, no, I think resilience is quite hard to define. And I think it's something that's a bit ephemeral, really. It helps us deal with all of the stuff I talked about, and clearly coping mechanisms are a part of it. But I'd like to suggest that, looked at in a with a positive mindset, resilience actually is a catalyst for personal growth. That's where I'd like to head with this. I mean, I think we should go through the coping strategies first, because I think that it's always helpful to have lists of possible improvement techniques for folks, because I know we've had some feedback that people like a good list.
Yeah, I know.
So
You're thinking about the book again as well.
I am.
Yeah.
I
You've
think
got
that
your eye on that book, I know.
I have, and I also just like to perhaps acknowledge again. I'm not an expert here, but having lived a certain number of years on this life, I would say I would recognize there's a couple of sorts of stress. There's the sort of the chronic tension that goes on for a long time, which is different from the stress you get, perhaps by being in an accident when your adrenaline kicks in and it goes away hopefully shortly after that. But ongoing stress, I think, is a bit like a dripping tap, isn't it? First, you don't notice it, then you're irritated by it, and then it becomes absolute torture and you can't stand it anymore. And also, I want to acknowledge the fact that people respond to stress differently, and that's absolutely right and proper. And so these are big generalizations and probably big dollops of personal experience here, but that it is what it is, and people can take out of this what they like. But I do think one tends to go, if we look at that chronic stress, that sort of that where you sort of you walk for miles with a stone in the shoe until you can't bear it anymore. And it always intrigues me actually why people do that. But would you accept the fact perhaps that, generally speaking, there's different stages you go through with that sort of chronic stress? If and I think most of our listeners will have this in their lives, either through work or through personal experience. So, there's a situation where you feel under stress, but you still feel, I'm going to use the term centered. I'm going to come back to that. You're under stress, but you're coping with it. You recognize you're under stress and you feel okay. You can manage. And then perhaps the next stage, you're really frazzled by the stress and you're making a huge effort not to be angry or resentment or impatient with those around you. And then perhaps that final stage is where you actually can't cope anymore. And there's an outburst. Let's perhaps not take it any further than that. There's an outburst which might get rid of the tension for a while, but probably leaves you feeling a bit embarrassed or ashamed or, exhausted or frustrated. And then the cycle starts again. Could you relate to that, Peter? Maybe not you personally, but just, in your experience of going through this life for a while.
For a while, for quite a while, but I've been going through this life longer than you, obviously. Yes, I can actually. I mean, you said I'm a, you know, like you say I'm a resilient. And yeah, I would recognize that. But I think that resilience and my general attitude was pretty tested in the early stages of my career. And I think I've learned from that. So I ran a project, a massive project. Probably too big than I should have taken on at the time, but nobody else was would do it or was available or had the stamina apparently to do it. And it ran for nearly 3 years, and it was a latter part of it. It was all consuming, and towards the end, when I recognised I had stress, I actually went on a holiday. I mean, even the holidays were interrupted with various phone calls and things like that, and you know, these are the days actually where, you know, we didn't have the mobile phones and in the dark ages, etc. So goodness knows what it'd be like in that situation. But as it was, I was attending so many meetings, traveling so many hours, involved in so many decisions, all the things I hadn't yet learned around delegation and all that, working with a team properly. And, you know, I went on a vacation and I was really quite stunned about 2 days in when I was really, really ill for a couple of days, and I was fine. I'm on holiday, I didn't feel well, and now I do. It's just one of those things, unfortunately. And then when it happened again on sort of another holiday, you know, quite a few months later, then I realized I was suffering from stress. And it was a result of the fact that, and if you like, my resilience was carrying me through on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And yet it was when I stopped, that's when it hit me.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from that, from reflecting on that particular approach, because I kind of realized I love project management, but I realized if I carried on doing project management the way I was doing it, I'd kill myself. So something had to change.
And so you came back and wrote The Lazy Project Manager, and then everything changed.
Well, a little Lazy Project Manager. Thank you for the book plug. it was written on the basis of some of the lessons I've learned, really.
Yeah. No, I think I knew that about you because you were being so grumpy. I said, for goodness sake, Peter, go and write a book. I remember that clearly.
Well, I recognise your truth, but whether it's reality, I'm not so sure.
I think putting up with chronic stress isn't good for any of us in terms of our health.
Definitely.
And actually, I think there are coping strategies for dealing with stress, but I think chronic stresses, I think, are best addressed because, as you just described, you know, you're very vulnerable. Your health is very vulnerable. I think if you haven't for too long. I mean, how many of us have teachers as friends who, you know, get to the end of term and they go off and they're sick? I mean, it's a thing, isn't it? In the education profession, I'd like to suggest that one of the tricks for dealing with, you know, just a high level of stress and an ongoing situation is to try and stay in balance, be resilient. You know, I guess is the phrase we use now. And, you know, as you move out of balance, you know, trying to get back into balance as soon as possible. So can I talk about that a little bit, about what it is to be in balance, how it is to feel centered, and perhaps a few tips and techniques to get there?
Okay, go for it.
Well, actually, you know, you've just described that stressful situation. So would you recognize yourself as being centered and balanced at times? How would you describe that phenomenon for you, Peter?
At times. How rude. No, I think I'm pretty centered and balanced most of the time now. I mean, I've recognized to control the flow of work responsibilities, you know, to use my team effectively, to, you know, perhaps personally assess myself a lot more on a regular basis. So
I think that's a good way to look at it. I think being centered or balanced has a set of feelings associated. You know, you're calm. I think one's calm, but you don't feel dulled. You just, you know, you have energy. Your mood's positive. It's not happiness, really, is it? I think it's actually more sort of contentment. It's an interesting distinction. And I'm often intrigued. You would have thought that that's a comforting place for people to sit. And I think as you get older, perhaps that is a more natural place to be. But often people actually are not comfortable being content and you know, drive, need stimulation and running off excitement and distractions. It's almost as though I think stress can be a bit addictive, actually. But you often see that, don't you, that people sort of need to feel alive, need to escape sometimes, and I think that's a self-perpetuating cycle. But
well, that's true. I mean I certainly look at the younger generation and some of the younger children, and you know, I don't envy them their kind of angsty existence they seem to want or do live these days, because they seem to operate on a level of stress which is some concern, I think.
Well, we're sounding like those two old gentleman Muppets now, aren't we, Peter?
Oh, I think Waldorf and Statler, yeah.
But I think, you know, when one is in balance, and actually I'm going to call that mindfulness. I think it's the same thing. It feels like it for me. So, you know, you sleep better, don't you? You sort of deal with expressions of excitement or anxiety or depression before they get worse.
Hmm.
And I mean, a big one, you know, being around you for a lot of my life, you make time to have fun. I think, you know, when you're in balance, I think having fun is a big part of it for a lot of people. You know, I think, you know, from a relationship point of view, you work on it, you're open rather than sort of being closed. I would say you don't multitask so much. You sort of focus on one thing at a time. And I also say you don't probably constantly monitor everything. So that was the sort of list I came up with. I was thinking about how is it do I feel when I'm sort of feeling more mindful? What is that characterized by? Does that resonate with you, Peter?
Yes, I think so. I think that, you know, key to it is being aware. I think a lot of it is.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and you know, if I go back to, you know, my story in my early days, I just wasn't aware of it, and having suffered from it, I became quite, you know, consciously aware of it and worried about it for a while. But you know, I found that balance afterwards, and you know, I think you know, it's about how you. I think a lot of it, you know, the old saying is, you know, problem shared. But I mean, I think if, again, in our world, if you have a good connection, group of connections, you have a good team around you, a good supportive infrastructure, and in your personal life as well, you know, friends and family, I think then you can certainly manage it a lot better and you know, perhaps even be tipped off if you're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I mean, just, you know, I made a list of the sort of things that you might recognize, one might recognize in oneself as being triggers or, you know, pointers towards the fact that actually you are getting more and more stress. And, you know, I was also thinking that if the being balanced and being centered is called mindless, I think this outer behavior list, I'm going to call it, I'm sorry, mindfulness was the phrase I was looking for before. I think the outer behavior list, I think, is mindless behavior. It's where you just, you know, you're repeating a scenario. You're not being thoughtful about why you're in it and what you might do about it. So, you know, you work until you're exhausted. You probably don't sleep very well. You know, you're putting up with the stress at work or at home. You're seeking distraction with, you know, TV or drinking or, you know, other behaviors. You know, when you focus intensely on what you're doing, you rarely move, don't get up. You're taking things seriously. You're overshedding your time. Probably you're fretting and worrying, probably constantly, you know, monitoring, texting, emailing, social media, you know, offering, eating in a hurry, perhaps. So they're all triggers, I think, that I would recognize in myself sometimes and other people. When you see that behavior going on, you think, okay, this is mindless behavior. There's actually got to be a better way to actually spend your time. Can you, obviously, you're not victim to any of those, Peter, but can you recognize that in other people?
Well, I have no problem with the drinking of the wine, but not success, obviously. Yes, I think all of those, well, they're all signs of you know, of, yeah, I'm trying to not deviant behavior, but, you know, behavior that is of some concern. Certainly, the more of those you tick off, the more concerned you should be. And I think it's, you know, what I've seen in other people is if you reach a point of just being overwhelmed, then that's it. I mean, you're going under at that point because you're not even treading water. Kind of what people are doing for a long period up to.
I think so. And I think prevention is the key here, actually. It's the best medicine, you know, and I think, you know, and it's about self-care. And I think it's about trying to recognize when you're slipping away from your core. And, you know, it's about self-care. And here's a phrase for you. I mean, I think emotions are a choice, actually, that we all have when you're in these situations. And I think you can choose how you respond to stress. I don't mean to underestimate the enormity of stress that people have with chronic illnesses or bereavement or, you know, heaven forbid, the sort of the situations we see in the war zones. But you can choose the way you respond to them. And I'd like to go on to that. And I mean, I'm intrigued often, you know, about the sort of the placebo effect in medicine, Peter, where, you know, there's lots of trials where people are given a drug and other people are given a sugar pill. And there's something about being given a pill by a doctor that makes people think that they're going to get better. And so they think they're going to get better. So they do get better. And actually, I did read a study recently, which was fascinating, where, so it's a thing, actually. I don't think, you know, we know really why the placebo effect works, other than it's evidence of the fact that the mind-body connection is probably a lot tighter than we ever thought it was. But I did read this fantastic study where, you know, the placebo effect was real. So people were just given a sugar pill, actually had a positive impact on their malaise. People who were given an injection, you know, a more serious placebo, if you like, which had water in it, they had a better impact. And then the last one, which blew my mind, was that people who had actually had surgery, the placebo effect was even greater. So there's something going on here, I think, about the power of your mind, where if you convince yourself that what's about to happen is going to be good, it is. And we talked about this in one of our leadership podcasts, where as we look forward, it was our optimism podcast, I think, that actually if you believe you have a possibility to go and achieve something, you have a chance of achieving it, even though it's very, very unlikely. Because the reverse is true. If you don't think it's going to happen, it definitely won't be. So there's something about the power of the mind, I think, in times of stress, where if you can generate a more positive outlook, it's going to help. And it might actually, move you back to your balance zone more quickly. Would you accept that as a premise?
Yeah, I do. Well, I guess it harks back to, that where I started off, really, around having that kind of positive, optimistic mindset, in which case, things don't overwhelm you, even if, it doesn't mean they're not difficult or challenging or, it's, creation of some form of stress, but it allows you to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, maybe just thinking about some of the triggers again, here's a list for the book. Common reasons for stress at work. Do you want to give me a few, Peter? I've got a list here that I've written down, but what do you think are common triggers for people having sort of an ongoing stressful relationship with work or life?
Well, I think it's when you're at work, it's very much as you're often your work is dependent on many others. So, stress can come from that direction. Stress can come from expectations. Stress can come from a kind of career aspirations or the drive to become better, bigger, better all the time, achieve more. There's a couple.
Yeah, I think so. I've got, taking on too much responsibility, trying to exert too much control, micromanaging, worrying about what could go wrong. Catastrophizing is the word I use, which I think, we're often very guilty of, that sort of little slough of despair we go into. Well, if that happens, well, that's going to happen. And if that's happened, that's going to happen. If that happens, we're absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's a very
good point. It's all going to go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so interesting. I was thinking about, those reasons for stress and think about, compare that sort of scenario to how you feel when you're engaging in your hobby. And I was just very struck by this sort of comparison, because, when you're engaging in a hobby, there's no pressure, is there? There's no micromanagement. You're relaxed. You're having fun. You're approaching steps to get to your goal. You're immersed in the process. You're focused. And you're just engrossed, whether you're playing sport, gardening, making a cupboard, cooking. And it made me think about, how could we be more like that at work? What does that mindset that we've got when we're engaged with something we love doing, like our hobbies, what could that teach us about how do we get more like that at work?
Okay, well, I'm trying to put aside the fact that someone might have cupboard making as a hobby, but
I was trying to be inclusive, Peter.
Oh, very good then. Very good then. Well, my hobby is writing, and I'm usually writing to a deadline. So you could say it's not. I don't find it stressful at all.
Well, I think hobbies can be stressful, but I think really, the point. Well, I think there are. If you're playing sport, you got a match point down in tennis. I mean, that can be.
Oh, yeah.
But the point. I think the point is you recognize there are sort of two different awarenesses that are going on in work and play, and you can choose. You can choose which sort of awareness zone you want to be in, I think.
That's why I play at work.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Because I don't think work forces us to be stressed. I think anxiety does. How we respond to the stress, I think, is what causes the longer term chronic stuff that actually we sort of talk about having coping strategies leading to resilience. I think a lot of this is to do with having a state of mind that allows you to sort of deal with this in an equitable way.
So can I throw something back at you then?
Please.
Right. So, going back to on the resilient thing.
Yeah.
Can we say then that someone is resilient, or do we say that someone almost does resilient? They do things that make them resilient, as opposed to having an intrinsic resilient capability. Does that make
sense? I think it's the second thing, actually. Yeah. I think what happens, people who are resilient are naturally doing things that make them resilient. That's my opinion.
Okay.
So, can I share a personal trick with you, from my own from my own cupboard that I made.
Wow, okay.
I find, so it's about trying to recenter during times of stress. So get balanced and be mindful. And for me, being mindful is actually paying attention to what's going on. And the trick is, for me, is when you're in that sort of situation, notice two or three things about the person or the event that you've never seen before. So pay attention to it, be mindful. And what is different about this that you've never noticed before? And what does that tell you that's different about the event? So a silly example here, you know, you spill a cup of coffee over the suit you're wearing, you know, for that interview or for that meeting, which is, you know, a disaster. Stress levels go up. But, you know, so what have you noticed about that? Well, you noticed about that, well, actually, I probably shouldn't be drinking so much coffee. That's not a good thing for long term. So, okay, my suit's a mess. I look, you know, I feel embarrassed about this now, but actually I haven't drunk that cup of coffee. Now, I know that's a silly example, but it is an example of how you can make a positive out of a negative. Take another one, think about in a relationship where, I don't know, your partner's being irritated by you through something you habitually do that irritates them. You know, rather than it triggering all those sort of, you always say that, or this is a scenario that, you know, gets that triggers one of your hotspots that we've talked about before, pay attention and engage. You know, so why has that triggered them? What is it that's making them so irritated with me? And I think when you're dealing with people actually really enjoy being engaged with, and they notice you're engaging with them. And that actually is the first step, I think, to sort of defusing situations. I will go as far to say, I think resilient people have this knack. And I would go as far to say that any setback has enormous possibilities.
It does. Well, I think, yeah, any setback. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know. I think there's a gradient here in the sense that
that's true.
I think resilient people address small problems regularly, I would say. I think if you hit with a really, really bad one, then that can throw it, even the best person off track, I think.
And yeah, absolutely. But we often see examples of people that have suffered terrible deprivation in their life, actually coming through it and just being shining examples of humanity. You know, there's something about the trials and tribulations, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that actually, when engaged with, people come through it and they prosper and they grow. And I'm not undermining the terrible things that befall people, but I am making the argument for there's a state of mind that you can adopt through these travails that actually give you the opportunity to grow as an individual.
Mm.
I think.
I think you're right. I'm going to go back again. You know, I like to go off into a slight odd tangent here, but I don't know if you made the story about, you know, spilling coffee over yourself. Do you remember the we were going somewhere on site and we met in a lay-by, and you encouraged me to have a bacon sandwich in the morning, which had brown sauce on it, which I then covered my shirt entirely in brown sauce.
Yep.
And you were very helpful. You said just do your jacket up and don't undo it again until you leave sight.
I do remember that.
That's very hot. Well, it smelled of brown sauce.
Well, I was going to say it worked because no one in the meeting, as I recall, saw the brown sauce, but everyone wondered where the Worcester sauce smell was coming from.
I think everybody was very hungry as a result of me being in the room.
I spilled a packet of soy sauce on myself once at an airport.
Yeah.
I was having some sushi flying out to Ireland, and. And it was one of those, actually it was embarrassing, sort of down the front of the trouser jobs, but so I couldn't really cover it up. But I decided, you know, being positive is I like the smell of soy sauce. That's a good job that's going to be with me all day. And so when I got into Dublin Airport, there was a drug sniffer dog that was doing the rounds, and he came straight to me, and I thought, oh no, don't tell me that the constitution of soy sauce has got some relationship with nitroglycerin, because this dog was just all over me because he could obviously smell the soy sauce. And the dog handler came over and sort of smiled at me, and I said, you're not going to believe this, but I've spilt soy sauce. And she said, no, that's not the movement he does when he smells explosives. He's just excited about the fact you smell great.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I think, well, I'm going to go off to another story now. So, and I think I told you this one as well. It was one of the periods of time when we weren't together, I think. And
Was there ever a time, Peter, like that?
well, it's that long ago, yeah. But so you can imagine, deal done, major deal, and it was the official kickoff and announcement, and there was this room full of the round tablecloth, white tablecloths everywhere. There was supposed to, I think it was about 80 people coming in the room, including the execs of this company. And I was there with the salesman from my own company and the salesman from the hardware company. And they'd been out on the drink the night before and they were incredibly hungover, of course. That's what salesmen did in those days. And our salesman, who was supposed to do like the opening comments, was almost fast asleep on the table. And the lady came around and put coffee down. So he had this black coffee. And unbeknownst to him, his tie had laid flat on the table and the coffee had been put on top of his tie. So when it was time to actually stand up and do
Wonderful.
the presentation, you can imagine what happened. He
Wonderful.
stood up, coffee went absolutely everywhere. And he didn't even hesitate. He just did actually a very impressive opening statement. And that was his gift, I guess, but he was not fazed by it at all. There was no stress, and he was resilient to the situation.
Well, I suspect that was the alcohol still in his system,
Well,
actually,
that could have
that
helped. And we're
made
not recommending that, are we?
insulating him from the horror of that situation.
I would have died. I would have died of embarrassment.
So, as we're sort of coming to the end of our listeners' trip into work here, aren't we? So,
Yeah.
I wanted just to think. So, we've talked about the importance of resilience. We talked about some how you might recognize, the signs of stress. We talked about some coping strategies. We talked about some the possibilities that actually it might actually have some unforeseen benefits, although it's not always obvious. I'd like to just. I also made a small list of some classic, I'm going to say, mistakes that I think people make in a work situation that causes stress.
Okay. Although I think your actual hobby is making lists, to be honest.
Well, there we go. Thanks for sharing that with our audience, Peter.
Okay.
So classic mistakes at work that cause stress. And this is, with my coaching hat on, actually.
Okay.
I think people often set their expectations too low. We've talked about the imposter syndrome on previous podcasts. But I think, we all struggle with self-confidence at times in our lives. And I think that often leads to the mistaken belief that if you set your sights low, you'll be safe. But I think the opposite is true. I think setting expectations too low traps you in roles and persona where you have limited opportunity to expand into something worthwhile. And so I think it's not the job that people get stuck in, it's the psychological limitation of setting expectations too low. So there's one.
Okay. All right. I'll take that one.
Another one that certain sort of in our industry, I don't know, it's sort of a perfectionist trait, really, but feeling that you have to be certain. And so often people feel stressed by the fact there's not a lot of certainty in the world. And life is uncertain. And I think that is a cause of a lot of anxiety for people who strive for certainty.
Yeah. Well, I think very recently when we discussed around, the value of actually just making a decision, making a decision is better than not making a decision sometimes.
It is. And I think, the way to deal with this one to lower the stress levels is recognize that, the unknown is actually a field of possibility. And I think personal uncertainty is hard. I don't mean to, I don't want to understate that. I know it's very difficult if you need certainty in your life and you feel uncertain. And it takes a lot of effort to put yourself in a position when it's okay that things are open-ended. But I think if you don't, all those possibilities are closed off. You don't see all those growth opportunities, which actually, in terms of a work context, in some respects, in the bigger picture, is what it's all about. And that's the third one, actually, neglecting personal growth. I think, great careers are built on growth. I think everyone has massive potential, and none of us know how to predict how we're going to be in the future. And insecurity, anxiety, and the pressure to hold on to a job often is powerful forces, but I think, that tempts you to believe where we are now is where we're always going to be, and that is just not true. So personal growth means that actually anyone can be anything they want to be. They've just got to want to do it enough. And so I think there are three areas that we all fall into those traps sometimes. So the takeaway for me would be a way to reduce stress at work is don't set your expectations too low. That might sound a bit counterintuitive. try and get over the fact that you need to be certain about things and don't neglect your personal growth, I would say.
Yeah, I would probably add, you know, using your connections, your network, your associates, I think is, you know, is a great supporting sort of infrastructure.
For sure.
I think
sure.
The more you are alone in some ways, then the more vulnerable you are to being overwhelmed by things and you know, not developing your own resilience.
Yeah, but well said. And, you know, make everything you do fun, eh, Peter?
Oh, be mindful. Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm, you know, I'm looking forward to being invited around to see your cupboard collection.
I don't share that with anybody, Peter, not even you. So there we have it. Resilience, a little bit of a, you know, a segue into how perhaps to, you know, deal with the vagaries of the life we're in right now. And, you know, hope someone somewhere gets some benefit from that.
Ah, fantastic. Thank you for that subject. Next one is going to be my subject. And hopefully I'll try not to delete it or not record it or whatever I did. So, yes, thank you, Daz.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye then.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.